I'm John Kroll. On today's No Limits, we're going to continue the community conversation about the challenges facing student immigrants and the schools that seek to educate them. Started by Lost in Translation, a storytelling collaboration of WFYI Public Media, Chalkbeat Indiana, and the Indianapolis Star. My guests are WFYI's Eric Weddle, Chalkbeat Indiana's Scott Elliott, and the Indianapolis Star's Stephanie Wang. Please join the conversation. Call us at 866-476-3881. Email us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about Lost in Translation, struggle and success as language barriers reshape Indianapolis schools. This program is part of American Graduate, a continuing initiative of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting that emphasizes the ways that public television, public radio stations can improve graduation rates and start students on the path to success. My guests are, I should say that the Lost in Translation was an innovative project that worked with three different media organizations. WFYI, obviously, the Indianapolis Star, and Chalkbeat Indiana. My guests are the three of the reporters who worked on it, starting with our own Eric Weddle from WFYI. We also have with us Chalkbeat Indiana Scott Elliott and Stephanie Wang of the Indianapolis Star. Welcome to all of you.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks.
It's good to have you here. Should say to our listeners, if you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, I'll throw this one out to any one of you. Normally, I kind of direct the questions. But talk about how this project got started, what the genesis was. You know, who was sort of the first of the brainstormers on this?
I'll be glad to take that. So I would say this project, at least for me, started almost three years ago when I was still a reporter at the Indianapolis Star. I met Sean Schlepp, who's a teacher at Nora Elementary School. She was at a competition where they were trying to win funding, and they were trying to win funding for an idea they had they thought would help with English language learners. And Nora had been through a really difficult transition. They had had a really fast growth of the enrollment of kids who were speaking other languages and were frankly struggling with it. Their grade had dropped to F. And Sean and two other teachers were very distraught about how the school was viewed as an F and somewhat despondent about their opportunity to improve from there. So I've sort of kept an eye on that school ever since that, and I noticed that their grade was creeping up and up to a C. So I've wanted to go back and revisit that story. So as I started talking about that with our staff at Chalkbeat, they started talking about Perry Township, which is a school district in Indianapolis that has seen the same kind of very large growth of English language learners. And we realized that this was sort of a broader story across the community. So once we decided we wanted to do it, I thought both other media organizations that are here with us, the Star and FYI, were really good partners for it because I knew that they both had an interest in, of course, education and I think also in the way our community is changing. Both of them write a lot about those kinds of issues or report a lot about those kind of issues.
Why did you decide to share it, though? I mean, it sounds like if it's a good story, traditionally the old model of journalism was that if you had something like that, you'd hold on to it for yourself.
So I'll just brag a little bit about Chalkbeat in that case. So we're a nonprofit news organization, and the sort of great thing about being nonprofit is you can be totally mission-driven. So really our mission is to have a lot of people read good journalism about education. It's not to be proprietary about our reporting and certainly not to just sort of hoard ideas to ourselves. So we have this extra freedom because we're not a traditional competitor in media to be able to reach out to other organizations and say, hey, let's work together. And in this case, Stephanie and Eric, the three of us have all worked together in the past. So as we were beginning to think about it, I reached out to them, just talked to them about ideas and gauged their interest. And it just turned out we all had a strong interest in this idea.
Okay, Stephanie and Eric, I'll start with Stephanie first. But what attracted you to the idea of doing this story?
Well, John, as you know, and as some other folks know, I'm transitioning from covering education for The Star to now covering issues of inequality throughout our city and our state. And so as you look at Indianapolis becoming a more diverse city, you have to wonder how that trickles down into our schools. And, you know, part of this project was looking at the way that having more English learners in schools is changing the way that schools operate, school districts, the way the funding flows, the way teachers have to teach, and the way that other students have to get along with new students coming into their classrooms.
Eric, how about you? What brought you on board?
Well, I think, you know, after speaking with Scott and Stephanie, just kind of getting an idea of what they were working on and the angles, I kind of wanted to see what other parts of the ELL story weren't being told. And I think a big part of it, too, is just kind of bringing in a lot of voices that we don't really hear traditionally in media, whether it's, you know, on public radio or newspapers or nonprofit newspapers or websites. So I think kind of all of us working together to kind of raise up these concerns that maybe small pockets of Indianapolis are aware of, but the overall city was unaware of.
I'm going to stay with you for a second, Eric, and tell me what, you know, when you started reporting on this, what was the most surprising thing that you discovered?
Well, I guess just in terms of how English language learners are taught. I guess, you know, a lot of the Chalkbeat reporting kind of opened up this idea that students show up to school the first day and they may not know English and that they're then put into classroom at some schools and a teacher who doesn't speak their language or the language of the other kids in the classroom just speaks to them and tries to teach them. And through this process, it kind of like do or die, sink or swim, these kids do or do not learn English. And so I guess I kind of originally thought there's more of a organized way among all the schools to teach English to these students, but we found out there's not.
Stephanie, you're reporting, I know you did one of the lead kickoff stories for it, and you started with a pretty poignant image of a kid almost being bullied and told that he wasn't welcome there. How did you find that kid? And how did you find out about his experiences?
Well, initially, I was really interested in the idea of the societal pressures that you feel in schools. I mean, that social environment can be incredibly brutal for young people, no matter where you're from. And so I went into it thinking about that perspective, about, well, here's one more thing that's making these kids different, right? That they can't speak English and they speak a different language and maybe they come from different cultures. So I approached it from that way, and IPS was kind enough to let me into Northwest High School and George Washington High School to start talking to students. And one of the things that I heard from almost every student who had come here from another country was that at some point they had been told by their fellow students, you don't belong here, go back to your country. And that's such a...
Yeah, not exactly a welcoming statement.
A powerful thing to be told from, you know, that's your first impression of being here in the United States. And so that story kind of developed by, after talking to all of those students, thinking about, well, maybe we should flip the script here a little bit. We expect a lot out of our English language learners when they come here. But what do we do to welcome them?
Scott, how large a problem just in numbers is this? That problem is probably not the word I would choose, challenge or...
Well, that to me, as we began to do research on this, the two things that jumped out at me from the series that as shocking. One was just how fast English language learning enrollment is growing in Marion County. So what we found was the number of children learning English as a new language has almost tripled in 15 years. And so the total enrollment countywide in public schools only is, I think, 13,000 or so kids, which would be as roughly the size of Warren Township School District. So there's almost like a whole large township-sized school district of kids who need to learn English in our community. I think a lot of people don't know that. So I found that very surprising, and at the speed at which the city is changing and maybe it's not obvious to everybody. And then the other thing was the funding. I mean, we were also sort of stunned to find that as this massive growth has occurred, the funding not only is not kept up, it's actually dropped. The per student amount that goes to schools to support English language learning has dropped about half from where it was 15 years ago.
What accounts for that?
Well, that's a good question. One thing we found was that the funding works a little differently in Indiana than most states. It's actually in a separate fund as opposed to being calculated into the usual funding formula. And so that always puts a pot of money at risk if it's in a fund that can be like more easily cut and changed by the legislature. The funding formula is a little bit bigger beast, so it's a little harder to make a dramatic change to it, although there are some in the works right now. So I think that's a big factor, and I think perhaps just the pure growth of the population is probably playing in there. And the good news is I actually spoke with Senator Luke Kemly today. He's a main budget maker at the legislature, and the Senate had proposed a very big increase in English language learner funding. And I asked him today how that was going. So it's in the Senate budget, but not in the House. And he said he felt pretty good that it could end up in the final bill. So there might be some changes on the horizon.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Lost in Translation, Struggle and Success as Language Barriers Reshape Indianapolis Schools. It's a multi-part series that's been reported across media platforms with the Indianapolis Star, WFYI, and Chalkbeat Indiana. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, let's talk about the challenges then, the stresses. First, let's start with the individual. We can talk about the system later, but these kids who come here, what are the challenges they face? Stephanie, I'll start with you.
Well, there's a story in the series that has a lot of really powerful images. You think about a student who comes here from another country without speaking English. It's not just a language they don't know. It's also things like fire alarms in schools. We had a story about a girl, a Burmese girl, who was walking in the hallway and pulled the fire alarm not knowing what it was. So it's learning what's around you in a school. You know, as a parent, what should you be asking of your teachers? What should you be expecting out of your children, out of your education system? In addition to sitting in a classroom not understanding English, let's say you're in a math lesson, you might recognize the numbers on the board, but how do you know what the teacher is teaching you or asking you to do?
Make the connections. What did you find in your reporting, Eric?
Well, I spoke to a few families and members of the Latino community here in the city, because that was kind of what my article on Charter is kind of focused on. A lot of these families talked about this, like, unsure what the best option was for their kids. They wanted them to learn English. You know, a lot of the families I spoke to, the parents didn't know English, so they kind of saw this as one step, you know, the first step for their children to go to school and learn how to speak English, and then help them, and then help the family kind of progress from that. And some families just didn't know if they're at the right school or how to find the right school. So that seemed to be a big concern.
Well, I would think there's also in saying that too. If you're an involved parent and you want to try to help your child with his or her schoolwork, or just check it, you know, and see, mm-hmm. be aware of what's going on in the school, that creates a burden as well, Scott.
Yeah, and that burden goes both ways. There's a great story from Haley Colombo in the series about Eddie Ronhell, who's a teacher in IPS, who found that by embracing his own he's part Mexican, and by embracing that part of his heritage, he was able to connect much more strongly with the students who were Hispanic in his class and their families. So that's there's a burden on the school to sort of reach out. So he told this story about working with this particular mother who spoke Spanish, and he speaks only a little bit of Spanish. She speaks only a little bit of English. And they worked through translator for a while and through email and using translation service like Google, and eventually got to the point where they could sit down together and hack their way through it. Like, just talking to each other with a little bit that they each knew, they could make it work.
What does it do, though, to the family dynamics there, too? I mean, you know, the classic story is that in some ways the children who do learn English and all mm-hmm. become kind of the spokespeople for the family. But
that's definitely true, and that's a fascinating effect all the way through, the way that English language learners can help each other, that the students who are a little further ahead. I remember a teacher telling me once that she was surprised to learn she had come from a very high-end, wealthy school where they rarely let kids work together because they were afraid they would cheat. And she discovered very quickly with English language learners, you want them working together. They can help each other. The ones who are a little more advanced with language can help the others understand. That's also true in dealing with the parents. But, I mean, I think a lesson that IPS in particular has learned is that they need more services. They need translators. They need to find ways to help parents.
We are talking about Lost in Translation, Struggle and Success as Language Barriers Reshape Indianapolis Schools, with three of the journalists who reported on this series. My guests are Eric Weddle, Scott Elliott, and Stephanie Wang. I am John Krull. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krull, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about Lost in Translation, Struggle and Success as Language Barriers Reshape Indianapolis Schools. That is a series that has been reported by three different news gathering organizations, WFYI, Chalkbeat Indiana, and the Indianapolis Star. My guests are WFYI's Eric Weddle, Chalkbeat's Scott Elliott, and the Indianapolis Star's Stephanie Wang. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what Ann has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Ann, welcome to the program.
Thank you, John. Thank you very much. I wanted to call in because something that Stephanie Wang said really resonated with me when she said that she had spoken with students and over she had heard that they had been told at some point that they didn't belong here and should go back where they came from. Obviously, that's wrong from a kindness perspective, but also I just finished reading Majid Nawaz's Radical, and that story tells how radicalization happens, and it begins with feeling ostracized and rejected. So for that reason, I believe the schools ought to have some kind of a program educating these students who don't understand what it's like to be an outsider and how they can help embrace our newcomers into our city. On a personal level, I can tell you that for language learning, I learned more when I spent 6 months in Spain, more Spanish than I learned in 8 years of instruction here in the U.S. in Spanish language. So if we can get kids talking and socializing and accepting, I think that's going to help the language learning as well as the values and morals of our society.
Thanks very much for the call and the comment, Ann.
Thank you, John.
Certainly. Well, that raises a question here. I mean, I would think in these situations, particularly with some of the ostracism that Stephanie has alluded to and all of that, the levels of frustration that these children must experience when they're in that environment have to be increasing, maybe even close to off the chart. Now, whether they get radicalized or not is another question. But could we speak a little bit to that? I mean, what are the effects on these kids when they come into that situation? Stephanie, I'll start with you.
Well, what's interesting, John, is that from those students who were talking about hearing their fellow students tell them to go back to their countries and that they don't belong here, there were often discipline issues that came along with that because they would hear those things and lash out or try to counter. And when you don't know the language, there's only so many things you can do to try to tell somebody how hurtful that was. So there was a discipline side that came to it. Kids were saying that they were getting in fights, even getting suspended. And we talked with IPS's English Language Learning Program Director, Jessica Fieser, who said that that's something that they're trying to reevaluate in IPS to try to get to some of the root causes of these fights and try to address those before just imposing disciplinary action on those students.
What are the biggest frustrations these kids experience? Eric or Scott, either one of you, I would throw it
to you. I think it's just trying to learn the language. I mean, they're in this classroom. They're just trying to absorb a cultural. I think, you know, for Stephanie's really in that her piece really described the cultural aspect that these kids are just trying to figure out what's going on. I mean, because a lot of what they're seeing and what I've been told from parents and some students is their home life and the school life are totally different. You know, some of the parents are still speaking only their traditional language. So I think it's just this a big issue of adaption and also how to deal with some educators and teachers who just don't know how to communicate with them.
So how do we go about making it easier for these students, that transition easier?
Yeah, so I have to say Stephanie's story I found particularly interesting for the because it's such a it's not the way I came at this question to think about how we welcome them as opposed to like, you know, how they can adapt to us. That's something, you know, I mean, it was one of the more heartbreaking scenes in her story is the girl who said she wanted to learn. One of the first things she learned to say in English was, "Don't talk to me," to make kids go away who are hassling her.
Yeah, we do make the assumption somehow that assimilation is exclusively the newcomer's responsibility and not ours.
And in fact, the series thankfully has some really hopeful examples of schools, how they embraced the diversity of their new diversity in these schools and used it as a strength. School 79 in particular is a fantastic example of that. You know, a lot of schools, as they get these big influxes, it can harm their test scores. We could talk about that a little bit here in a minute about how testing plays in, and harm their school grade. And sometimes that can foster resentment or frustration on behalf of the folks who were already there. Like these kids came in and now our school looks bad. And School 79 looked at it exactly the opposite. They were like, what an opportunity to learn from these kids who come with all these fascinating worldwide experiences. There's dozens of countries represented at School 79, and they've done it so well. I mean, this is a school, it's one of the highest poverty schools in the entire state. It has the highest percentage of English language learners of any school in the state, and it has been an A for five straight years.
How did they do it?
So the principal, Joyce Akridge, is quite a dynamic principal, and she lives in the neighborhood, which I think was very helpful to recognizing the change that was going on. And she instantly realized that she and her staff needed to learn how to teach English language learners. So she herself went back and got a master's degree and a credential in English language learning, one of the very few principals who has that. So did several of her key teachers. And they just began instituting a lot of successful strategies, and a lot of it was attitude. It was seeing the value of the diversity of your school as a strength and not as a weakness.
How did they go about? You say that they saw the incoming students as an asset rather than a burden, and that they integrated their experiences into the educational experience there. In what ways did they do that? Could you give me some specific examples? And I'm sort of throwing that Scott's way, but any one of you can jump in.
Yeah, I would say there are two keys. One is so there are actually some very effective techniques to help kids. One of the things I asked one of our reporters, Shana Cavazos, to write about was, I said, her, dispel the magic for me here. Like how, just what Eric started out describing. How does a person who doesn't speak any of the students' languages walk in there, speak English to them, and somehow get them to learn how to speak English, right? Well, there are actually some very effective techniques for that. So schools like Southport High School and School 79, Nor Elementary, are all using these common techniques. They're as simple as using a lot of pictures and gestures, hand gestures, as ways to get around the language barriers to more complex sort of systematic changes in the way that they set up, say, a 10th grade English class for children who are learning English is different than a 10th grade English class traditionally. So those are some things. Maybe you guys can suggest some others.
Stephanie?
Well, I was thinking that I was speaking with somebody from Welcoming America for this story, which is a nonprofit organization that looks at fostering the relationship between foreign-born and U.S.-born Americans. And she was saying that you think about in the workplace that people who are bilingual are valued. That's a very valuable skill to have. And so if you look at some of the fantastic photographs that we have from our Indianapolis Star photographers, there's one of a young student sprawled out on a rug doing his work. He's filling out a worksheet. And the carpet is filled with two ways to say words like chair or the number 7. So you're learning both sides of saying that at once. And, you know, it's not just your students who don't speak English who are looking at that rug. You've got everybody in the classroom learning in that space.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Lost in Translation, a series that has been reported by WFYI, Chalkbeat Indiana, and the Indianapolis Star. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, we've established that, you know, these challenges create problems for the students, you know, adjustment problems and some feelings of ostracism and frustration that create some tensions, obviously, in the families of those students. They also create stresses in the educational system, the schools. We probably ought to talk a little bit about that. Eric, I'll start with you. What are the stress points for the schools?
Well, I think it's almost everything that we've been here discussing. It's like how to teach, how to interact with these students, and how to get their families involved. I think a big thing is bringing in families into the schools to make sure that they're aware of what's going on and how they can interact. You know, but I think the schools then have to deal with all these issues of the test scores. You know, if you have these students who are coming in below grade level, you know, ideally you're going to have a lot of ELL students come in who are not at the same grade level as a student who grew up in America. So I think they have to work with trying to bring that student up. And then when the issue of test scores and accountability comes in, that can cause a lot of problems there.
Well, and that's the other part, is how does this dynamic play out in the, you know, the much larger educational debate we have been having in this state and obviously in other parts of the country for the past 15 to 20 years. I think that's a big enough subject. I'll let all three of you have a crack at it. I'll start with Scott, then go to Eric, and then Stephanie will get the last word.
So we have a story up today in the last part of the series looking at sort of the policy implications of what we found. And testing is a really big question. So, you know, No Child Left Behind has pushed states like Indiana to put English language learners in front of English language tests very quickly. So if you – we have examples in our series of kids who literally their first week in the country, they start their new school – and they are handed an English language math I-STEP test to take.
And they don't do well, surprisingly.
I mean, Sean Schlepp from Nora Elementary told me this heartbreaking story about this. You know, she says one of the hardest things to do is you have to build trust with the child you can't talk to. So you're trying to be – that literally smiling is an important strategy, like trying to be friendly and be welcoming. And then you put them down, sit them down, and they can tell it's a test. And so they're looking at the test, and she said this little girl looked at her and gestured, and she could tell from the gesture she was asking, what do I do with the numbers? Add, subtract was basically what her hand gestures were asking, and Sean's not allowed to answer. So Sean just has to stand there stone-faced, and the girl began to just dissolve into tears, and it harms that trust that they're trying to build. So this has raised questions about whether we have the right testing policy, and I think that'll be an ongoing debate.
Eric?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone who follows education knows the big debates on the scale of school accountability, the A to F scale. There's been a lot of debate about that. I think everyone thinks it's broken now. And I think a lot of these schools that have these large population of students want there to be a lot that to be taken into account. You know, I think all these schools have open enrollment. They really can't, you know, decide who comes to their school. Mm-hmm. So I think they want people to take – to look at that and say, you have X number of students who are below grade level, they're English language learners, and that should reflect what we're doing at the school, because if we are helping them, we should get a lot of credit for that instead of being penalized or getting a lower grade.
Mm-hmm. Punished. Stephanie, yeah. You get the last word here.
Well, I'll just add an anecdote to what Scott and Eric have said. I was speaking with a high school student at Northwest. She's from Guinea, and she also studied in Belgium for a year before coming here. She was saying that in her country, she had already graduated from high school, and she had to start over here, you know, going back into high school. And so a lot of the content were topics that she had already learned in school, and what she had to work on here was her English so that she could pass these tests.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Lost in Translation, which is a series about the challenges that English language learners when they hit Indianapolis school systems. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Rosie, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. I'm a retired teacher at the elementary level, and in retirement I've been working with, back in the 70s I worked with Lao, with people from that area of the country from the Vietnam War. But recently I've been working with Burmese children, and in most of these cases, especially at the upper elementary level, I have found, I wanted to add to the many good things that have been said about being cordial and smiling and accepting and really loving the kids, which helps a lot. But using nature, what's going on outside at the time, at the beginning of school, you know, you have fall and what's changing around us, and insects and the squirrels. And I have animals myself, so I take my rabbit or my turtle or whatever. But concrete is one of the key words for me in working with these kids. And they're just wonderful people. So I'm very blessed to have them. Some of them have grown up now from my elementary work with them, and they come and help me in the garden, and they're just fine people. So I just wanted to put in my 4 cents.
Thanks very much for the call, Rosie, and
thank
you for sharing your story. Well, how much of that is the key? I mean, we see in so many other parts of education that one of the keys to educational success, particularly with children who are having a difficult time for whatever reason, is to form a connection with someone in the school, something, a relationship that becomes a source of stability and trust. Does that apply in this situation, too? I see a lot of people nodding heads up and down, but that doesn't work so well on radio, folks. So someone has to talk. I'll go to Stephanie because she's smiling the biggest. Okay.
Well, in two of the high schools in IPS, some of the new positions are college and career readiness coordinators that are specifically working with English language learners. And those were two teachers who I saw making a lot of connections with their students. They even had students staying after school to be part of an international club that discusses diversity. And they're actually making a documentary right now, working with those teachers to interview other students and administrators and teachers about what diversity means to them and how it affects the way that you're treated.
If you are just joining us, we're talking about Lost in Translation, Struggle and Success as Language Barriers Reshape Indianapolis Schools. What I'd like to ask here is, obviously, you know, there are stress points here. What are some changes we could make in the way that our school systems are structured? I mean, it sounds like with the testing, for example, we don't have a mechanism in any way to evaluate, you know, these students as they come in. So we don't have a baseline, which then, you know, means that every other test they take after that really isn't that reflective of their ability. Scott, you're nodding your head. I'm going your way.
Sure. I mean, I think there's several things to think about. Testing policy is certainly one that ought to be reconsidered. You know, given our new reality with this immigration, this amount of immigration, do we have the right policy there? Do we have the right funding method? You know, should we be more like other states? And would that make this perhaps more stable, the funding for these kids? And then at the school district level, you know, some of these schools that have made some progress, Nora is an example, a lot of it was district-level support. I mean, they doubled almost the number of English language learning specialists in the schools. It makes a big difference. Those specialists work directly with the students. They help the teachers learn techniques they need in order to better succeed in their own classrooms when the specialist is not in there. So, and then also, you know, as we talked about with IPS, this outreach effort and how you connect with the community. Again, the story of Eddie Ronhell was very good in Haley Colombo's story, where he talks about, as he was able to talk about his own experience as a Mexican-American, it helped the Hispanic children in his classroom feel more safe. And so a student actually got up and told his harrowing story of coming across the border into the United States. I mean, just think about how much your other kids in that class can learn when a kid gets up and tells that kind of personal and compelling story about what their life's like at such a young age. That's an asset to the classroom, you know. So, but Eddie basically said that probably wouldn't happen except the kid felt comfortable with a Mexican-American teacher.
We are talking with WFYI's Eric Weddle, Chalkbeat Indiana's Scott Elliott, and Stephanie Wang in the Indianapolis Star about their series Lost in Translation. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about Lost in Translation, a series on the challenges that English language learners face when they come to Indianapolis and to some degree Indiana schools. And if you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by giving us a call at 866-476-3881. I should say that this program is part of American Graduate, which is an initiative of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting designed to show the power of, leverage the power of public radio and television stations to start young people on the path to graduation and success in life. My guests are Eric Weddle of WFYI, Chalkbeat Indiana Scott Elliott, and Stephanie Wang of the Indianapolis Star. They all reported on the project. Just before we went to the break, Scott, we were talking really about, you alluded to the way that the immigration debate in this state also kind of overshadows this, particularly since one of the themes here is that it is important to be welcoming, that these children need to feel like they're coming into a friendly environment. But obviously we've seen debate at the state house level. You know, we've had attempts here in the Indiana state legislature to set our own immigration policies, as it were, that have been difficult. What role does that play in this? I mean, are the students who come in and their families even aware of that debate or dynamic? Stephanie, I'll start with you, but I'm going to let Eric have a crack at that one too.
I think you have experts who say that a lot of the way that kids react to other kids might be something that they're taught in their home. So, of course, that's something that could affect the debate. No matter how somebody got here, public schools do have an obligation to educate them through high school. And so whether you have a refugee who has been resettled here by the State Department, or whether you have somebody who's coming here without the proper documentation, you're still going to be facing these same issues in schools.
Well, and I guess where I go is it strikes me that that debate, to the degree they are aware of it, can be like that, you know, the kid that we were talking about who was being bullied on the slide at the playground or whatever, the sense, you know, where he's being told, you're not welcome here, we don't want you here. Does that, you know, permeate down to them?
I'm sure it does. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you can be told that and not walk away with something. We had some of the students who are high school students who are saying to me, yeah, no, I know why people hate us. You know, my uncle told me it's because people think certain things about us.
And is some of this also, I mean, the challenge here, we tend to think, you know, and much of the debate is focused on only one source of immigration, basically that coming from Latin America. But in this program, we've listed many different nationalities. Is the problem that the debate is too limited? The discussion, you know, about the nature of the immigration that is flowing into Indianapolis and Indiana. Scott, you're nodding your head, and Eric, I'm going to give you a crack at this one, too.
Sure. I mean, like, honestly, one of the things I learned from this series that I was surprised by was just how diverse the immigration is coming into Indianapolis. I mean, I was in one classroom at School 79 where there were six kids in that classroom. They were from three different continents and six different countries. I mean, there are dozens of languages taught or spoken at home in a school like School 79. So, I did not recognize this as happening in Indianapolis in my own life to the extent that we discovered it was when we looked at the school. So I wonder how many other folks who are listening to this on the radio really have no concept for how dramatically the city is changing. There really is a dramatic shift going on. And so, you know, whatever your take is on immigration or whatever, I mean, it's a reality. It's just happening, right? So given that it's happening, probably, you know, if there's one place where people have to really deal with it, it's at the school level. So some more thought probably just about what that means is probably called for.
Eric. Yeah, I was just going to kind of echo what Scott said, but I think there was an event recently, actually, Scott hosted, and Lewis Farabee, the superintendent of IPS, was asked about language learners, and I think he maybe mentioned a number of how many languages were taught at IPS, and I think a lawmaker may have asked him if he had enough people who could speak or translators for those students. And he kind of laughed and said, no, there's just so many languages, so many immigrants coming in from all over the world. There's no way to have someone there who can speak directly to all of them.
Does that really overstress this? I mean, we are talking about a time in which educational budgets are being subjected to more scrutiny, certainly, than they had in years past. What pressures does that create, Eric?
Well, I think a big pressure right now is trying to get educators or teachers who speak dual languages. Mm-hmm. And I know that's been, I think, been a struggle for all these schools and all these districts. And as we see more schools focusing on it, I think there's going to be a lot of competition among schools to either steal away the best teachers or go out there and find money to bring in teachers from across the country, possibly who speak both languages, because from what I've heard from everyone I spoke to, they're hard to come by. And I think schools are struggling to find those teachers who can speak both.
We've got an email question from a listener named Pam. If you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Pam says, I came from Dayton, Ohio, where the city has a program called Welcome Dayton. It helps immigrants with all sorts of challenges upon arrival, such as getting permits for business, language barriers, residency issues, etc. Do these reporters know if local government is willing to help school districts with transitions?
I'll take that question because I also came here from Dayton, Ohio for 25 years.
Okay.
I don't know of a program like that. Perhaps there's another listener who can tell us if there's something like that. I certainly think that there's a growing need for government-level awareness that services of one kind or another are needed. Perhaps the place where it's being best met are in districts like Perry Township, where a lot of Burmese immigration has occurred, where the schools have at this point pretty successfully adapted to it. That's a good example to learn from.
I've also got an email from a listener named Randolph who says, how can multilingual volunteers help the students or the schools?
I'm sure the schools I spoke with, I'm on the charter schools, I'm sure they would be open to people coming to them and saying, I have this skill. How can I help? Because I know a lot of schools now are working with aides who don't have a teacher's license to kind of be in the classroom and help students. And I don't think I met anyone in my reporting who wouldn't welcome that kind of help.
We are talking about Lost in Translation. It is a multi-part series across three media platforms dealing with the challenges facing English language learners in Indianapolis and Indiana schools. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Sandra, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello. What's on your mind?
Thank you for... Continue?
Oh, I was going to say, what's on your mind?
Well, I was calling because, interestingly enough, I taught at Northwest High School for 18 years, and I was chair of the Modern Language Department. And when I left Northwest, there were very few students from other countries, but we had had experience with visitors and guests from other countries. And one of the things that we certainly prided ourselves on was welcoming those students. Even though everyone didn't speak their languages, we understood that more than 80% of language is found in gestures and body language. And I think these students, in the lack of language ability, they understand these gestures very well. So as far as welcoming them, we can certainly extend our smiles, as was mentioned on your program. But another thing that they're going through is a totally different culture from their own. And food, habits, customs, the way students act in schools, very different from where they're coming from. And I think one of my recommendations is that all teachers be required to learn a second language, because in so doing, you will see the compassion that is needed for the teacher to have when a student is not understanding. And so as far as translating is concerned, I think instead of giving a test in English to a new student who doesn't speak the language, I think it would be best to have those tests translated. And I think one way to see how that works is for us to be given a test in, say, Chinese or in Japanese and expect us to respond favorably on that test. So those are my comments.
Thanks. Sandra, could I ask real quickly before I let you go, When did you leave Northwest?
I left Northwest in 1986, and I joined staff at University of Indianapolis.
Oh.
But since then, I have run into students who said, Mrs. Hayes, well, that's my last name.
That's okay. You're allowed to say it. I'm not.
I didn't believe you when you told us that one day we will wish we had worked harder in your classes to learn language and that there would be many opportunities, because this is, that was at that time, the fifth largest Spanish-speaking country in the Spanish-speaking world. And they said, you've made a believer out of us. So everyone, take a foreign language so you can see what it takes and what these kids are going through to learn English.
Thanks very much for the call, Sandra, and for sharing your story.
Goodbye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Well, what about that? I mean, in terms of preparing teachers, I mean, what do we need to do? Because it sounds like this trend is, if anything, only accelerating, right?
Yeah, well, I think there was, a report just came out yesterday about new teachers. Now they're on the decline again. And so I think if we have less teachers or less people going into teaching, we're going to have less people who speak both languages who become teachers. So I think the colleges, a lot of people are going to kind of step up in a way and trying to recruit people and kind of make that possibly a focus of a program.
Is that the challenge, though? At some level, obviously, there has been talk about a possible teacher shortage and all of that because of the changes in education. This, it seems to me, creates yet another dilemma because, as we pointed out, bilingual employees are, prized also in the for-profit sector, which creates a tremendous competition for their services, and that tends to drive wages up above what most educational institutions can pay. Scott?
So one of the lessons of our series is that you really don't need bilingual teachers so much. There's a great advantage if you have learned a second language, as the caller said, just in sort of understanding all the things that she described. But really, what would probably help more is if everyone who is being trained to be a teacher were trained in some of these English language learning techniques. As one of the sources in our stories said, these are good teaching techniques, period. I mean, there's really no downside to teachers learning the techniques for English language learning. So that is a potentially powerful strategy. I do think one of the things that the caller, Sandra, said was, can we give the kids a test in their own language? And the problem there is that there's too many languages. I mean, when we asked the state that, they just laughed and said, my God, the cost of producing, 50 or 60 foreign language versions of ISTEP is just prohibitive. So you're not going to be able to create content in other languages. It's just not practical. You're not going to be able to expect there to be enough teachers bilingual in the right languages in the right schools. It's not practical. So what you have to do is widely use these techniques that have been shown to make a big difference.
What is the takeaway, would you say, from reporting? I mean, what do you hope ultimately that people will learn? The most important thing, they will take away from this reporting. I'll start with Eric, then go to Stephanie, and then to Scott.
I think it's the idea that it's actually happening here in our city, how our city is changing and how these schools are trying to basically make new innovations and face this population, which we're all responsible for living here in the city. And all students have to learn, and some schools have a much more difficult challenge now trying to teach these students. So I think hopefully people will read this and kind of see what teachers are dealing with and then what the state's dealing with as they try and work through this.
Stephanie.
Well, as diverse as Indianapolis is becoming, the diversity in Indiana is actually growing slower than it is across the nation. I mean, I think this is the first year where nationwide minority student groups as a whole are expected to outnumber white students this year. So you're going to have more students of color. You've got a lot of diversity that's happening across this country. And hopefully with this series, which we were able to bring you in print, online, and on the air, we were able to tell a lot of stories that people might not encounter in their everyday lives yet, but might be helpful to them moving forward.
So at the very least, you hope that it will expand people's horizons.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. Yeah.
Scott.
So I tried to boil down the series to one sentence to explain it to one of my colleagues at Chalkbeat in New York. And I said, I would say, our city has changed. Our schools need to change or children will get hurt. That to me is this simple story here that we've got. We are definitely putting children at risk of being hurt, and there needs to be some reconsideration about how we do things given the absolute reality that this is a quickly changing city.
Okay. So that's the nut of it, really, is the schools need to change or the children will get hurt. Each of you, could you give me one concrete way schools need to change to deal with this? I'll start with Scott and then go to Eric and give Stephanie the last word.
Man, okay, pressure. I mean, I think that the what I would suggest is if you're – I asked this a lot when I was at School 79 and at Nora. Like, what would you tell other schools? And that suddenly see what they saw. I suddenly get a huge influx of English language learners, and they said, you know, get help, you know, be friendly, reach out to the community, and I think most importantly, just believe you can do it. You know, I mean, it was a hard lesson, I think, difficult for Nora Elementary to learn that, hey, we can do this. You know, it just felt so overwhelming for them for a while. So that would probably be the best that I could say.
Eric.
Sure. Well, in my reporting, I spent a lot of time at some of the charter schools here in the city, which are smaller, you know, compared to like Nora. So I think the thing that they would say is more personal attention to students is a big thing that schools can do. But I think bigger way is, as these schools like Nora or some of these charter schools have ways that they felt they're working to share that information. I think, you know, here in the city, we're probably going to see more sharing of ideas. I think that'd be one way to change it, if schools swapped ideas.
Okay. Stephanie, you've got about 30 seconds for the last word.
I think one of the lessons that came out of several of the Chalkbeat stories is the need for a more diverse teaching force. You have a lot of diversity in students, but it's not keeping up at the same rate with teachers who, as Scott had mentioned, can relate to students in different ways when they can share some parts of their background.
How much of that's going to be money, though? I mean, diversity is a challenge for the private sector as well, for the for-profit sector. All of us have worked in newspapers and know.
Well, yeah. I think you saw one of the stories mentioned that IPS is hiring a diversity recruiter. There was a single Latino administrator in IPS who was recently laid off. So,
yeah.
That answers, yeah.
I think there's a good story to tell potential, you know, teaching is a great profession. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, you have an amazing impact on people's lives, and particularly folks who have grown up perhaps with some of these same storylines as these students. You know, they can really make a difference in the world by getting involved as teachers.
Well, that will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Eric Weddle, Scott Elliott, and Stephanie Wang. They are reporters who have worked on Lost in Translation, which is about the challenges English language learners experience when they come to Indiana schools. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.